Ken and Michael back for episode 43 of A Shot at Business Central and a Beer. Today, we're bringing you, as always, the latest Business Central news. Then we're going to chat with Ryan Mead from Dynamic Web about e-commerce and PIM. And finally, Ken and I are going to wrap up some things by taking a look at a couple highly rated free apps from AppSource. But as always, though, before we do that, we'd like to dive into the beer. So, Ken, how's it going? And what kind of beer you got for us?
Oh, Michael, it's a beautiful day to be talking Business Central, as always. And so today I was up and we're going to be drinking an Alaskan Amber Ale.
Nice.
So Alaskan Brewing Company in Juneau, Alaska, makes this the first Alaskan beer that we've had.
Yeah.
It also is a little bit unbelievably the first official amber beer.
That is unbelievable. That we've had. Yeah, it's very unbelievable.
So not quite as common. Remember back in the day, Killian's Irish Red was a big amber ale. And there's also, you know, there's ambers and red ales. And like red ales are typically more maltier and darker.
I don't know if we've done a red ale either.
I don't know. Amber ales are a little bit lighter, more a little bit more hoppy character, but you still have that red kind of hue.
Yeah, it's got that nice golden red hue.
Made due to the specific type of barley that they use to make it. Yeah. So
it smells good.
Yeah. Looks deep reddish color. Nice head.
So speaking of the head on a beer, right? I saw this video. Now you tell me if this is true or if this is crazy. I seen this guy. He's like, everybody pours the beer with the beer on the side of the glass and has no head or whatever, right?
Right.
Then he took another one and he poured it real fast and had a bunch of head. And then he took a bar napkin and he put the bar napkin in the beer that he poured on the side that had little head. And it like exploded. He's like, this is what happens in your stomach. This is why you're bloated. It's not how you pour beer. Then he took the bar napkin and put it in the other one that he poured really quick, and there was no chemical reaction whatsoever. I don't know if it's true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so what he's saying is he basically, when you pour it, and it burns off a lot of the carbonation before you drink it. You're eliminating all of that carbonation.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the CO2 coming out or what. I have no idea. He was the bartender and said everybody's doing it wrong.
I kind of do like medium, a mix between that. Like I'll start off pouring it kind of onto the side.
Yeah.
And then as I continue pouring it, I kind of go towards the center because I do want some head on top.
So do I. I like it for the smell, right? I think it smells better with
the
look,
the feel, the smell. Yeah. It's just, it looks, you know, so I kind of a little bit in the middle there.
Yeah, I never seen that with a bar napkin. You know, the little napkins they have at bars. Yeah. And you put in the drink and it was like putting a Mentos in.
Well, I don't want to get too off track on this, but but if you've ever done like a beer bong,
yeah,
right? Part of what allows you to drink it so fast is if you remove the carbonation.
Oh, while is that
the
what
beer
it
is in the funnel. And one of the ways that people do that is by putting their greasy hand in the funnel.
Wax.
And you see all that foam just melt away from it. It's a little disgusting.
I've seen that with pop and everything too, soda.
It's a little disgusting, but that's kind of a well-known little trick any beer bongers out there.
All right, here I go. First taste.
Yeah, not bad.
Episode 43.
Kind of, to me, it's amber, but it doesn't have like a particular amber kind of taste to it. It's more, I definitely taste the maltiness in it, but it could not be amber and I wouldn't really know a difference.
It's got a little bit of an aftertaste to it. I don't know if that's common with amber ale beers.
That's that malt kind of barley. You think that's what it is? Grain, yeah. Kind of reminds me of, I'm going on the way back machine here in terms of the podcast, but we had a beer called Dynamo Copper Lager.
Not one of your favorites.
No, but it kind of reminds me of that.
Oh, taking it to the beer already. It's over for this guy.
Yeah. So
not bad.
And on, you know, Beer Advocate, I was always excited as always to go out there and see some of the funny comments that people had. And I got to tell you, this is actually maybe the best overall comments I've seen. I did not see any significantly negative reviews. Everything was generally positive. Here's just a sampling. Absolutely a favorite. Overall, it's an outstanding beer. Gorgeous, deep amber color with decent head. Beautiful amber color, extremely smooth and pretty sweet. No lingering taste. One of my favorite amber ales.
I'll agree. The color's beautiful. Reminds me of fall. The person who said that there's no lingering taste, I'm going to disagree with. I think there is compared to some other beers.
It's pretty mild, though. It's not...
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. I think... We had Bastard Ale, or what was it?
Arrogant
Bastard. I think that had a really strong aftertaste. Yeah. I'm shocked, though, that there's really good reviews for Beer Advocate, because those people are beer snobs, that, you know, put it the other way.
Right.
And this is too much of a plain, regular
beer.
It's not really crafty.
You thought you'd different. See someone going, this is totally weak. Yeah. It needs more alcohol.
Right. Yeah. It's like a sweaty shoe and I get done playing basketball. Something crazy. You know what I mean?
That's good stuff.
But yeah, so I'm kind of shocked. The can's kind of cool. I mean, they're really touching into the Alaskan thing with the fishing boat and.
Yeah, and they've got like a big story on their website about how they got started in 1986 and found some old beer recipes and everything. Although, you know, if you go to the homepage, you see like they have an IPA, a hazy IPA, right? And so, yeah, of course, you have to adapt and stay current with the trends. Right. But I'm sure, you know, everyone's got their story.
You got to have the story. You got to have the story. Whether or not it's true or not, you got to have the story.
another thing. Are you calling their story fake?
No, I don't even know the story. I'm just saying. Yeah, it could be any type of, you know, any beer company. Everybody's got a story. Who knows? We even had, what was the one that I always thought the best was the monks who originated the beer from like.
Oh, the 1400s.
Yeah.
Belgium or somewhere.
Right. It's like, how am I going to verify this is true?
Right. Just trust them. It's the media. It has to be true.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So this is going to be an exciting show. So let's not bury the lead here. 2022 wave 2 getting deployed. I see scheduled for deployment October 23rd.
I've seen it.
We'll see if everything goes well. Maybe people are already up and running. Hopefully people have previewed it. You can go into preview it. And during our shot segment, I'm going to talk about probably five or six of the key user features. Nice. That are new, and I went in and tested them, and I'm going to give you some feedback on them and a couple gotchas.
Oh, really?
To look out for. Yeah, tread carefully. And then when we get to our apps, we kind of, Michael and I challenged each other here to go out there, filter on apps with four or more stars, and are free.
Really free.
And
we could use.
Truly free, right? Yeah. Exactly. And I think we found a couple that we're each going to share our favorite of those, the best one that we think you know.
Fits the bill. But before that, what are we going to do? We're going to talk to Dynamic Web,
The Dynamic Web, yeah. So that's going to be interesting. We're going to hear about PIM. You mentioned PIM right at the onset. What the heck is PIM? Well, we're gonna find out what PIM is. And why it should be important to you.
It's a new buzz acronym. All right. Everybody stay tuned for the next segment. And we are back for the shot of Business Central. Got some interesting news topics for you today. Later on, Ken is going to talk about the features and functionality that he tested for Business Central users. But before that, a couple quick little pieces of notes. In Microsoft Ignite recently, Microsoft announced a couple new features. I would say they're like productivity features for Business Central. And the first is improved Teams and Business Central data integration. So according to Microsoft, I'll read it for you. It says, in November, Teams users will have access to Business Central data from within the Teams app, regardless of whether they have a Dynamics 365 license or not. So if you're not licensed for Business Central, but your organization is using Teams, there are still going to be certain pages and things that you can see while working in Teams for Business Central. So that's kind of good, kind of way to bring everybody on board. So look out for that in November. The second thing is, Business Central is now, you're not going to be able to embed Business Central in Teams inside the tabs. So instead of sharing like the Business Central link and then working in your chat or whatever, you can actually have a tab inside Microsoft Teams where Business Central, that page is always open, easy for collaboration, and you know, very nice. So two productivity things for Microsoft Teams and Business Central. We haven't seen a lot of Teams integrations with Business Central updates over the past, I don't know, 6 months to a year. So it's good to see a couple things.
The newest release coming out has kind of a little preview feature in there when you share something via Teams to
Nice. So it's very nice.
Exciting.
All right. Next up, Microsoft Office is retiring after 30 years of service. Don't worry, your favorite apps aren't going to go anywhere. This is basically Microsoft just officially rebranding Office 365 to Microsoft 365. So they're going to add some new functionality, but over the next next month or two, we'll see a switch from Office to Microsoft 365. And lastly, what I have, I kind of came across this October poem. It's a little different, but it's involving Business Central.
Oh, is there an author?
No, it's anonymous. October is the month when Release Wave 2 says hello. Business Central version 20 is over, and version 21 says let's go. As version 20 ends, we smile because we'll get to play with all our new feature friends. You could say it, Ken. Go ahead. Say it. Go ahead.
You wrote that?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who the author is.
It's lovely.
Yeah. But pretty interesting. Not bad. Well, that's all the news I got.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dynamic User Community Summit was recently held in Orlando. A ton of people there. A lot of good stuff from what I heard. A lot of good sessions. May have been some issues with the app on the first day, but it's all just rumor and innuendo, you know. So, but overall, good conference. A lot of people back. I heard, you know, not quite to the pre-COVID levels, but definitely a significant increase in attendees from last year's summit.
Right.
So that's good news.
Was that last year live?
Last year was live in Houston. I couldn't, you know, I would guess it was probably 25% of what was there this year. They I don't know the exact number.
I heard 5,000.
5,000-ish, yeah.
Last year was the bracelets and everything, right?
Yeah, it was probably about 1,000 or two, I don't know. But anyways, yeah, and one of the big things that at Summit is Mike Morton, right, who is the general manager, right, of the...
He's actually been promoted, right? So he used to be the vice president of...
Oh, Vice President of SMB Business Applications.
Yeah, he oversees all of them now.
So he gave a presentation, and during his presentation, kind of put up a slide that basically showed that GP, there were going to be no more new releases, new features for GP going forward.
Yeah, it was basically the demise of GP.
And specifically, it said there's going to continue to be releasing like regulatory tax and security updates, but October 22 will be the last one where there's new features, and that they're going to be investing in Business Central for their SMB product.
Yeah, so I heard, though, at Direct Strike during the slide that they also put up, they basically said GP's pretty much going away. It's time to move to Business Central. And they put, and on the side, they had four partners that said, if your partner can't help you move to Business Central, these four partners can.
Yeah.
People went a little crazy, to say the least, which, you know, as a GP partner or GP user, it makes complete sense, especially after hearing for years and years and years that GP's not going anywhere, you know, to be around. But I know they had to come out with an official statement, basically, I don't know, rebutting what they said, which is common sometimes, but.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, to me, I think, you know, they did then clarify and announce that it is part of the life cycle support plan for the next, I don't know, 5 years or something. And they're still committed to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, it's nothing new. And I think if anything, that slide was maybe like a trial balloon, like, hey, let's throw this out there, right? Let's see what is the reaction? What is the community thinking? And to me, I know there's a ton of GP super fans out there, mm-hmm. And they love it. And it's been a good product. It's worked for them and they want to continue using it. They're not maybe ready or they don't need to make a switch, right, which is a big investment for their business, which is understandable. So I could see really no change, right? Meaning they're going to continue to create releases and updates that are going to be regulatory improvements and fixes and things like that. But I think the message has kind of been clear for Microsoft, kind of clear, right? Maybe that doesn't make sense. Most of their investment is going into Business Central.
Yeah.
Right. And there's migration tools to go from from GP into BC, yeah, and they continue expanding those tools.
I think one of the messages Microsoft has been most clear on that I can remember throughout my days so far in life is that they have made it really clear that they are a cloud first company. Right. GP doesn't seem to fit that mold, right? There's no cloud option for GP yet.
Right.
Should you be surprised that the writing is sort of on the wall for GP? No, Microsoft wants cloud recurring revenue. That's what they want.
Right.
You know, they'll keep it around for a while, like you said, right? But they're not going to pack it full of features and keep continually developing it into a powerhouse software like it used to be.
Right.
So yep, that's my opinion.
Yeah. And then the last little note I had, it was the Directions SMB Dynamics Partner Conference. Was just announced for 2023, kind of a save the date came out. So if you're interested, if you're a partner in the SMB market, you may want to head to Orlando, Florida, April 16th through the 19th. Again, this is partners only, and with a Microsoft presence there too. So
it's in April?
That's coming up. Yeah, April in Orlando. Yeah.
Wow. So there's one in April. Then DynamicsCon is in May.
Yep.
And then Summit will be towards the end of the year, though, right?
Yeah. Kind of October again, I think. Again, next year. Charlotte, I think, is where the Summit. Really? Next year's October Summit will be in Charlotte,
oh,
I believe. Yep. And nice. DynamicsCon.
Is that out west?
I think is going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona.
I think so.
And this Directions Partner Conference North America is going to be in Orlando.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, lots of good options out there. Lots of good meetings, in person stuff. I think you always get a lot done, and it's a nice change of pace, refreshing to get out of the office. And hopefully, more and more people continue to attend these.
Yeah, I'd love to see the numbers for Summit, to see how many people attended, were partners, were ISVs, were users, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know if whoever will, but yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
All right.
Next up, what?
That's your shot.
That's our shot. Yep. Next up, we're doing Dynamic Web with Ryan Mead. So stay tuned. All right. Ken and Michael, we are back for the special guest interview. We have Ryan Mead today joining us from Dynamic Web. Ryan's going to talk about himself, about Dynamic Web, about e-commerce, PIM, a whole bunch of good stuff. So we're super excited that you're on the podcast, and we appreciate it, Ryan. So how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great. Excited to talk business and also drink a beer. So it's a good time of day to be getting into that. We appreciate you having me, Michael and Ken. Thanks so much.
Nice. What type of beer you got today?
Well, I'm going to get a little sound effect for the audience here. And if you could hear me open it up and crack a cold one, but it's actually... I was thinking a fall beer, But I don't like fall beers typically. So I got a beer from the mountains of North Carolina, which reminds me of fall. We nice. Head to the beach in the summertime, and we head to the mountains in the fall and winter. But it's a Supernova IPA from a little brewery up in Banner Elk, North Carolina, called Kettle Beer Works.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Never heard of it. Nice.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a little local. What's that?
I thought you were going to go down the pumpkin route when you said it was a fall beer at first.
I can't. I can't do pumpkin spice lattes. I can't do pumpkin beers. I can get into some like Oktoberfest beers, but don't give me the flavored stuff. I can't handle it.
We're right there with you. Although maybe 1 month we got to try different pumpkin beers. There's got to be one out there that's
no. I don't think so. No? I walked a whole past a whole row of pumpkin beers without even thinking twice.
Seriously, even if they were like really discounted, I'd pass.
So what kind of alcohol percentage you got on that beer?
That's a great question. 6.2, which I felt was also a good choice. It's not too big because I'm, you know, still have some work to do. So,
so are you down in North Carolina?
Yeah, just north of the Charlotte area in a little town called Mooresville, North Carolina, also known as Race City, USA. So a lot of the NASCAR teams are actually headquartered out of this area.
Okay. All right. Over on the western side of the state over there. Have you been to a little town, not to get too far off topic, little town called Blowing Rock?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Banner Elk sits up really close, actually, to Blowing Rock. So we love it up that way.
Yeah. I was up there for a trip. It's a beautiful little town.
Beautiful. Especially nice. This time of year. All the leaves are changing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice country. Great place to live.
Absolutely.
Nice. So, well, I don't know. How about start off with hearing a little bit about yourself and maybe how you ended up in the e-commerce industry?
Sure. Yeah. So I have one wife and three kids.
one dog. I love it. I got one wife.
It's important to make sure we clarify. But no, I've been in the the dynamic specific community for like 8 years now. So started with Dynamic Web. Just over 8 years ago. It's my first venture into e-commerce. Had come from project management prior to getting into this industry and knew someone in the industry. And it was a time where there were some transitions going on with the industry that I was in and had an opportunity to jump over here and started out at Dynamic Web as a project manager, and then moved into doing some solutions architecture, and then moved to customer support, and then partner support, and then sales support. And so I've been a little bit all over in the company, but we love it. We all wear a lot of hats, and I think the journey has actually really helped me to be better with our customer and our partner support as I have a little bit of hands-on experience with the product itself. So.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds like you're a little bit of like a Swiss Army knife there.
My dad would say a jack of all trades, master of none, but I don't know if I claim that or not.
So Renaissance man.
That's it. There you go.
Yeah, nice. So yeah, so tell us a little bit about Dynamic Web. You know, of course, we are a Business Central focused area. So a little bit about Dynamic Web and background and then how it kind of relates to Business Central.
Absolutely. So Dynamic Web started 1999 in Denmark as a content management system. It was built by two gentlemen who are still running the business in Denmark and out of their dorm room at the time, as all great tech stories, right? They either come out of a dorm room or some garage somewhere. But it was started in Denmark, and we added on platforms, grew our platform, added functionality. So we added e-commerce, we added digital marketing for email marketing functionality, we added product information management over the years. We've grown those all internally. And Dynamic Web was coming around about the same time Navision, you know, and that's also a Denmark product, the precursor to Business Central. And AX or Azokta at the same time too was coming up. And so we had a very early relationship with Dynamics, specifically those products. And so we quickly became a Microsoft certified partner. Over the years, we've grown into becoming a Microsoft Gold partner and have a lot of customers that are in that BC space because of the size of their business, or manufacturing distribution organizations. A lot of B2B, probably about 80% of what we do is B2B. And so it's just really a sweet spot for Business Central. And so now we're on a journey to help customers. We natively integrate to BC. So I think that's interesting as well. And seeing a lot of customers, as I'm sure you guys are, making that migration from Navision over to Business Central. So supporting that roadmap for a lot of folks.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a bunch making the migration. So speaking of Business Central and whatnot, to kind of put you on the spot here a little bit.
Yeah.
Why should somebody who's running Business Central, an organization, let's say, choose Dynamic Web as their e-commerce provider? So what separates you from some of the other big boys out there?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I thought you were going to ask me why would somebody choose Business Central. I'm so glad that you didn't ask me that, because I was just going to divert the question back to you. No, from an e-commerce perspective, yeah, there's a lot of players out there, right? So the sweet spot for Dynamic Web is we really consider ourselves more than just a shopping cart. So there's a lot of add something to your cart and check out functionality that other providers support. And most definitely Dynamic Web can do that. But where we see a lot of success and a lot of customers that come to us are where they need a little bit more than that, right? They need a little bit more than just simply add to cart and check out. So things like complicated business processes that need to be reflected through a user experience that's consumable by, you know, maybe people who are not necessarily tech savvy, or from, we see a lot of businesses and they're transitioning from one generation of ownership to another generation of ownership. So they're trying to do more online than they ever have before. And they're challenging this concept of, can they even do it online? And so people sometimes think that things are too complicated, but hey, let's take a crack at automating that and bringing some of that to the web. So as examples, we work with a lot with configurators. So where products need to be configured, we work with companies that have maybe complex like inventory allocation, for example, like in the horticulture industry, customers that have shipments like the first Tuesday and Thursday of every month and they truck and they have to build up based on the inventory allocated to them in BC to what's available on those trucks. They can build up their cart and build up what they call racks, right? And they can see, if I add two more plants to this rack, I'll fill it up, and in doing so, I'll get a better shipping rate. People wouldn't normally think about that as an e-commerce solution, right? Because it's a little bit more than adding to your cart and checking out. So rental logic is another good example, being able to see when stuff's available to rent based on lead times and return times and maintenance times and stuff like that that's managed inside the ERP that we can bring a user interface for. And then a lot of self-service. We're seeing a push for this, right? Customers want to be able to do more online. They want to see order statuses. They want to see tracking information. They have a experience as a consumer seeing all that information when they purchase stuff themselves, and they now expect that from the distributors and the manufacturers that they're working with. So self-service functionality, invoice, ability to pay invoices online, manage their account online. So a lot of that, bringing that functionality to the B2B world.
That's great. Sounds like you're really tailoring to what customers want, and the keyword was what they expect nowadays. Mm-hmm. So that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, there's a lot of times a mismatch, right, between what customers expect, right, out of the box Business Central has, right, and then what they really need. Mm-hmm. And I notice, you know, and we've chatted in the past about, you know, PIM, product information management, and that's something that you guys have. Maybe you can explain, just, you know, I know a lot of people, especially, you know, a lot of old NAV businesses, or even, you know, whether they're just distribution or manufacturing companies, a lot of them don't have a PIM system. They just have Business Central, and they just set up an item and they give it an item number and a description. And maybe they have like a status flag that tells them, you know, what the status of the item is. But why, like, what's PIM and why has it become so important for people to consider?
Yeah, great question. And really another way how we set ourselves apart from some of the competition, because a lot of times to get a product information management system, you have to go to a third party that does product information management. Like, that's all they do. And in essence, product information management is a tool set to allow customers to really enrich product information, things that you don't want in your ERP, right? And in the past, what we saw was customers, Navision and other Microsoft ERP, they'd really just customize the heck out of their ERP in order to add all these product fields that really have no business doing in there because they're not really serving an ERP purpose, right? Yeah. So a product information management system gives users the capability to add enriched product data, maybe even things like styled data with bullet points. Those aren't usually pretty inside an ERP. Things like product assets, images, videos, other digital assets, and gives folks a place to manage all of that information with a nice tool set that's built for it, and then do something with that product information, right? And the things that they're going to do with that product information is put it on their website, or they're going to send it to maybe two or three websites. Maybe they have a B2B site that gets some of the data, but a B2C site that gets other sets of data, or they're going to push it out to like an Amazon, right? Or a third party marketplace because they're starting to go on this journey of selling direct to consumer. Or they're going to put it in a print catalog, right? They want to download it to an InDesign and make a really pretty print catalog. And a product information management tool really gives customers a tool set to do all of those things in a user-friendly way. And then you have this like now master source of truth for your data. We still get, you mentioned, right, the item number, the product name, status flags, et cetera. We consume that information from Business Central, but then give the users one place then to add all of that other data and manage it instead of, you know, we talk to customers all the time. They have hundreds of spreadsheets that are circulating throughout the organization through different departments. And maybe they're on somebody's desktop, maybe they're on, you know, SharePoint, and they're trying to figure out who has the most recent version of this spreadsheet. And God forbid a product should actually be on multiple spreadsheets, and then who knows which is the most up-to-date information. So, right, it eliminates that noise and those inefficiencies.
Do you have any? So in the past we've worked with companies who, you know, wisely understand the benefit of having a really robust e-commerce mm-hmm. presence, right, or a website presence, but sometimes they struggle with the you know, all the work that it takes, I mean, to truly build out all of that data that they, like you said, they've got some of the data is over here in spreadsheets and some of it's, you know, in some other database and they're on some old website where you can't really lift stuff off of it really easily. Yeah. So from an implementation standpoint, any thoughts or guidance or recommendations like on what companies should think about or consider if they're going to go with like a solution like this, what should they plan for?
Yeah, I'm going to get there, but before I get there, okay. Well, I think what's the most important thing for companies is to start understanding that, you know, 62%, some stat in that neighborhood, 62% of customers that sell B2B are already employing some kind of e-commerce or self-service portal. 62%. Okay. Now the scary number for me in that is that means 48% are not. So yeah. there's this huge gap, and maybe some of the companies that you're talking about have no e-commerce for or self-service function or very limited. But then following on that, Gartner did a report, and they had stated that 80% of B2B sales interactions are going to between suppliers and buyers will occur in digital channels by 2025. 80% of the interactions, right? So the first thing I would tell a company like that is, hey, if you're not investing or considering in your roadmap to invest in having a robust way to handle these online interactions, then you're going to quickly lose market share because customers are expecting it, right? They're moving that direction. Yeah. So I'd kind of start with driving a little bit of that just need and what the market's shifting to. And then I would say, yeah, there's definitely some real things to think about in terms of implementation, getting as much of that data available though, through tools like a product information management system where you can import bulk data into just as a starting point, right? Or getting it into your ERP, So that the data then can be automated and we can set up the integration to cut down on processes. It's amazing to me. I talk to customers all the time that have a website that's selling products, selling, you know, creating orders, but they're not integrated to BC, right? And so maybe they're running a Business Central solution, but they're not integrated in all the manual work that creates to then create the order in BC and then update the order back into the web. And just it's almost like it's a facade of a strong customer experience, but it's tied up with a lot of manual interaction. So I think, you know, I'd dive a little bit deeper to say there is a cost of implementation. There is some lift that is probably going to be happening to get you onto a more robust solution. But what time are you going to save? What money are you going to save? What can people start doing that's really well tailored for people to do and automate the stuff that they don't have to do, right? And so I'd look at some of that return on investment over time.
What from all the customers and people that you deal with, what's the number one thing that holds them back from moving to a better solution? Do you have any idea or any guesses? Is it price? Is it just not knowing? Is it afraid of, you know, what it could be?
That's a great question. I think there's two primary reasons that we see. One is that, you know, short-sightedness on the return on their investment. So the initial price or the ongoing monthly price, and I'm sure you guys see this too, as companies are assessing even Business Central, right? Yep. There's a price to have sophisticated solutions, and some customers just really struggle to see the value. I'd say especially some of those that are in that transition of generational ownership. The other piece though that we see a lot is, and again, you guys can probably relate, is customers that try to take systems that were in place, 20 years ago and force a new system to replicate those business processes that once upon a time were driven off of stuff that people did manually, right? And so we try to really work with our customers on, let's revisit, why do you do what you do? Is anybody really looking at that report? Does anybody really have, you know, because if you can replace some of that stuff with more configurable solutions that are automated, you know, you can make a jump. But I'd say that there can be a sticking point in that scenario for folks where they just can't see, you know, the forest through the trees of their old archaic business processes.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Why switch to a better, more robust system only to have it do exactly what you were doing?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe to start out that way, but eventually you want something a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, and I think to me on the ROI side, I think about like, okay, let's say you have one salesperson, right, who's out there selling for you, right? What's their annual salary total earnings per year? Now you have this, now compare that to an e-commerce site, which is out there selling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right? And what's that cost per year?
Yeah. Right,
for the revenue that could bring in for you.
Absolutely. Especially especially those customers that are selling some simple stuff online, right? Parts, small products, those things that can be like, automate that piece, turn your sales reps really into folks who are nurturing accounts and who are doing more of the complicated relationship and complicated, you know, sales processes, is a way that we've seen some people shift. And yeah, let attrition take care of, you know, the cost of investment.
So over the last couple of years, would you say there's been a big bump with organizations trying to adopt e-commerce platforms, especially with COVID, or was it just business as usual, nothing different?
No, it's been a huge bump, and we continue to see people driving that way. So even in the middle of like our current economy and some of the struggles that we're seeing, you know, we're continuing to see this push where folks are trying to figure out how to get better margins, right? They're trying to figure out how to overcome supply chain issues and provide better information to their customers so they're in the loop along the way. They're trying to figure out in a labor shortage, and it's hard to find people, right? So expect skilled people for certain industries. And so they're trying to figure out, how do we give our customers the capability to do more? So I think what we saw at COVID, which we did see an increase of just basically getting stuff online, right? We need to do more online. And I think we've seen it continue to grow as a result of some of those other efficiencies that people are looking to pick up. Yeah.
It's almost like people just don't want to talk to people anymore. You know what I mean? Like it used to be, everybody didn't like going to buy a car with the salesperson jumping on you, right?
Yeah.
It's the same way when you buy something else, you just want to buy it and, you know, just get on with it.
Why waste? Well, at your convenience.
Yeah, that's
right.
It. Exactly.
Like when you have a moment, it's kind of like text messaging, right? Like, yeah, I could pick up the phone and call one of my friends, but to ask him a question.
Yeah.
But
hi, how are you?
I could just text and they'll answer when they have the moment to answer. Right.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And on the self-service side, right? People are running their businesses. They don't want to have to then also modify their business to work with whatever the hours of operation are for their wholesaler or distributor or their sales or resale, right? They want to get products, their vendors. They want to get stuff at a time that's convenient for them. They want to do their work after dinner, you know, because that's when they're getting around to doing that administrative work. They want to walk the floor and be able to scan some things and add them to their cart instead of having to create a list and then go back to their office. Mobile, that's another big driver, right? We're talking to...
Absolutely.
For example, an arborist organization, and they want their tree techs, right? Guys that are climbing trees, to be able to, on his or her lunch break, to be able to plug in the items that they're going to need while they're out in the field to do some maintenance on their gear that then they can swing by and pick up from their local store. So they don't have to waste time going to their local store, finding it, putting the order in, et cetera. Right. So, and they want to do it from their mobile phone. Like that's different. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's technology. For
now, them. If I ever see a guy hanging in my tree while he's trimming it up with with a tablet in his hand.
That's it. We'll put safe, like a drive.
Call him an idiot.
Yeah. So just interesting use cases that we see all the time of how people, you know, especially the folks that are thinking ahead in terms of their digital roadmap, right? They're thinking about how do they compete, heavy competition areas. They're thinking about how do they do more of this online, more of this in a mobile friendly way to get ahead of that curve. Yeah.
Well, I don't have any. I only got some speed round questions left for Ryan. You got any more questions?
Yeah. Hit the speed round, man.
All right, so Ryan, This is one of my favorite parts. These are just
I don't have to take a shot every time I answer a question or anything, right?
No, but that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Take that under consideration.
Yes, these questions are pretty much just yes or no. You don't have to put too much thought into them. And they're all over the board. So whenever you're ready, my friend.
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, number one, will on-premise software exist in 20 years?
No.
Number two, with All Hallows Eve fast approaching, do you believe the Headless Horseman will make an appearance?
Yes, Headless is big.
Number three, should Jeff Bezos be referred to as the father of e-commerce?
I hope not. Maybe.
Number four, by the year 2040, it's estimated that 95% of all purchases will be through e-commerce. In your opinion, is this figure too high?
No way.
All right. And last but definitely not least, will you be dressing up for Halloween at the end of the month?
Yes.
Nice. You don't have to tell us what it is, but
I know I don't know what it is, so I'm glad that wasn't part. I figured I could not confidently answer with a yes,
but
I likely will be.
Nice. Awesome. All right. Well, it's been fun. We appreciate you taking the time.
Oh yeah.
We didn't give you too much time, I guess, to drink your beer with all the questions, so we apologize for that.
Yeah,
I got a couple drinks in. I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on, and excited to have conversations with partners like you all and how we can go, you know, help our customers figure out solutions to the problems that they're dealing with every day.
All right. If they want some more information about Dynamic Web, I can't remember. Is it just dynamicweb.com for the website?
Yeah. Dynamicwebusa.com, info@dynamicwebusa.com. We're also on all the social platforms. So LinkedIn's a good way to find us as well, for example. And, great. Yeah.
Or they can reach out to Solution Systems, and we can always get in touch with you as well. So
absolutely.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, you guys. Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Too.
Bye.
All right, everybody. October is upon us. Actually, almost November. And what that means is that the preview of 2020 Wave 2 is available. Hopefully, everyone out there has gone out there, created a new sandbox of the preview environment, take a peek at some of the new features and functionality. But I am a realist, and I understand that most people probably have not, because it's my full-time job to do this kind of stuff, and I still was pushing it off as long as I possibly could. So with that said, what we're going to do during this little segment here is cover some of the new features and functionality that I checked out in the preview, which, you know, may soon be upon us here in the next couple days. And I want to give you some feedback on what I saw. I'm going to focus specifically on the application and user experience features, right? So we're not, there's development, service, platform, Microsoft 365. Those are all kind of technical things and integrations. I want to focus on for the end user.
Just your average Business Central user.
Yeah. What do you need to be aware of here as an end user? So let's start off. You log in. What you're going to see now is a new little, almost button up on the black, very top of the ribbon, up on the top where you have your gear icon, where you can pick your company, everything. And what it does is it shows you the environment that you're in. And what you can do is you can click on that, and it will show you, it opens up a drop-down menu of all of your environments and the companies within each environment. So in a single click, you can move into a different environment, different company, or just a different company. Like let's say you're working in your production environment and you have five companies and you do work for more than one of those companies. You can quickly toggle into one of those other companies in a single click. So, or even different, like one of your sandboxes. I want to go into one of my sandboxes and check that out, check something over there.
Nice.
Or you're one of the organizations that has multiple production environments.
Is there something you have to enable to see that?
Nope.
You know,
if no, it's just, wow, just right there. So that's there. So switching between environments and companies, significantly, I don't say significantly, much easier though.
If, a couple less clicks,
if you have more than one company or more than one production environment, this is going to really make your life easier. Okay. Now the second thing is what they are referring to as the modern action bar. So now, right, anytime you open up a page, let's say a customer list or a custom item card, you've got your action ribbon along the top, and it's got like, you know, let's say on the customer card, you've got your home button, then a related button, actions button, and those open up sub menus. They've done two things with the new quote modern action bar. The first thing is that they've moved some stuff around to make it more consistent across pages. So like you find similar things in the same spots.
Gotcha.
Currently, there's some differences. You know, on this page, it's over here. On that page, it's over there. Right. And they've kind of taken a lot of effort to streamline and make those options consistent. The second thing they've done is they've added a ton of personalization capabilities. So let's say there's a particular button that you use all the time, and currently it's under related, customer, and then cross-references or something. And you go into cross-references all the time. You can go into personalize, and move that option right up onto the top of your action bar. Nice. Right. You can also hide stuff or move other things, right? Because that in your role, those are things that you do.
Right.
So to me, that those are some, especially that one is really nice. And it's going to allow people to really clean up their own pages for themselves based on what they do every day.
Yeah.
Which is very nice. Right.
It's also really good for role specific. Right.
Correct. Role, just make yeah. Even like if you've got, you know, maybe you have like six or eight people who are customer service reps, but even within that group, they may do things differently. I work with this customer more, so they have cross references off a lot. I access that all the time. So I'm going to move that. Someone else in my group, maybe they don't have customers that use cross reference numbers. They don't move that, right? So it's just giving the user more power, more control to make themselves more efficient and kind of clean up some clutter, hide some stuff that they don't need to see.
Sounds nice.
Now, you're sitting there, Michael, saying, Ken, that is all great, but I'm really used to how I have things set up now. And all of a sudden, am I going to come in? Am I going to go into Business Central on October 24th and all my shit's going to be gone?
Yes. No.
The answer is no. This modern action bar is something that you can enable as an organization through the feature management page.
Great.
Okay. So even once you upgrade to 2022 Wave 2 or version 21,
yeah,
you should not see any action bar paint changes. So at some point you will have the ability. Now, version 24, which is what, 18 months out? At that point, the new modern action bar becomes the default.
Oh, really?
So you have literally like 18 months to go in and enable it. Now, in new environments, like if someone's just created, you know, just signed up for Business Central and they're starting off, it will be auto-enabled,
yeah,
right, by default. But if you're an existing customer with a live production environment, you've got 18 months to go in there, train your people, yeah, and figure that out. Okay, so those are the first thing. Right when you log in and you start navigating, those are a couple of big things. Now let's get into a little bit more. A third thing related to that is you're going to see Power Automate menu options all over the place. There, if you're not using Power Automate or you don't want users to see that, probably because you're not using it very much,
right,
you can turn all that off and get rid of it. Now,
in the feature management?
But that's what she has. Like, well, where do I go to do this?
Right.
This is not something you would figure out unless you had information, like help. There's a page called Privacy Notices Status.
Who knew?
Right? And on this Privacy Notice Status page, you see that there's Power Automate listed there, and you can set it to disallow or disagree to privacy sharing for Power Automate for all users. And that will basically kind of remove it. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of a little thing. Now let's get into specific features, functions. Power BI, right? It's embedded into there. Currently on the Role Center page, you only have one Power BI window pane, right? There is now the ability to add multiple Power BI charts.
Really?
Onto a Role Center.
Nice.
However,
uh-oh,
none of the out-of-the-box Role Centers currently have more than one Power BI chart displayed.
Really?
So instead, there, if you go into the online help, you'll see that it'll say what you need to do is you can create your own Role Center, and there's a template or a sample of how you do it. Okay, so it is.
I'm a fan of that, I guess,
right?
But
yeah, baby steps.
Exactly, it's a stepping stone for sure.
Yeah, so I do love the fact that they appreciate that users do probably want to see more than one Power BI chart on their Role Center.
Yeah,
right.
So manually having to switch.
This is a way that you can accomplish that. Now you can in that one window today, if you have Power BI chart, you can change the chart that you're looking at.
Right.
But you can only look at one at a time today. So this changes that. Okay. All right. Next, anyone who's used Navision, Nav, or BC, and you're in the financial area before, you know about account schedules. Account schedules are effectively your financial statements, right? Well, they've finally taken the jump, the leap, to rename account schedules to financial reporting. So now you no longer see account schedules anywhere. Yeah. You see financial reporting listed on the menu.
Do you like that?
I love it. I love it, right? Because for 20 plus years, I've been having to explain new terminology to people about what is account schedules. And sometimes the terminology just doesn't make sense. Gotcha. Right. So now it's called financial reporting. They've also changed the structure of it. So this also used to be kind of a not intuitive completely. The account schedule names were actually sets of rows, and then account schedule column layouts were sets of columns. And you just assigned a default column to each name, but then you could change the column layout if you wanted and kind of train people. What they've done now is they've created what they call row definitions and column definitions.
Okay.
So you can create an unlimited number of row definitions, an unlimited number of column definitions. And then the financial reporting name itself is simply a description with one row definition and one column definition set.
Okay.
So you can create an unlimited number of those, but it's really just a combination of rows and columns that you want to see together. So I like it. You can also copy one financial report, again, just a combination of rows and columns, to a new one, change your column format, give it a new name. So it's pretty quick to create a new one. Nice. And then really sweet, you can, let's say you have multiple companies or multiple environments, and you've set up all your account schedules or financial reporting in one company, but now you're going live or you're deploying a new company. You can export your financial reporting, one financial report. It behind the scenes builds a configuration package with everything it needs. Then you can go into a different Business Central company environment and import the financial report. And it builds the column layouts, row layouts, and financial reports.
Sounds like a huge time saver.
Right. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So I love it. I've always been a huge fan of account schedules. I was a little skeptical, but it's all great. So far I ran into no gotchas or issues on that.
How long do you think it'll take you to drop the account schedules terminology?
For me personally, yeah.
You're gonna be saying it.
Financial reports is much.
Yeah.
It that's what it is.
Right.
It's financial reporting. Yeah. So not long. Okay. Couple more to go. So this is a little bit in the weeds, but like when you set up a vendor, right? You may have a vendor that you buy from, but you remit your check or payment to a different address. In the past, you would have a separate pay-to vendor, but then the vendor ledger entries would get written under that pay-to vendor.
Okay.
And it just created some confusion for people. So they've created a new entity, a new table with under the vendor called remit to addresses. So you can now have one vendor that has one or five different remit to addresses. So it's a simpler, cleaner setup,
yeah.
Right? And then when you go to create a purchase order or a purchase invoice, you can set which remit to address you want that invoice to be paid for. Now, unfortunately, on this one, I do have a gotcha. When you go into the, so what I did was I created two invoices, one for remit to same vendor, one for remit to one, another invoice for remit to two. I went into a payment journal, I ran suggest vendor payments. I ran it one line per invoice, basically. Yeah. And in the numbering and the document number, it assigned the same document number to both of those invoices, which means it would potentially print one check of those instead of honoring the remit to address.
Why do you think that was?
It's possible I did something wrong. But again, maybe that's not too intuitive if that's like the case, because it should, if it knows that, because on the vendor ledger entry, you could see remit 2-1, remit 2-2.
Yeah.
It should know that I need to create two different checks because I'm paying that to two different remit twos.
But it doesn't.
So possible I did something wrong. So I don't want to say that's a gap there quite at this point, but I did struggle with that on my first
time. Sounds like something that needs to be in a minor update.
So be careful about that. And now I'm going to save the best for last. But before I do that, here's a few other features that they've added that are minor. I'm just going to kind of rattle through these pretty quick.
User-friendly?
Yeah. So first of all, if you use item variants, not many people do, but if you use item variants, there's now a way to force the user to pick a variant. That was not standard. So that's kind of cool. Item charges. They've made it easier for you to assign item charges in the case of partial receipts against purchase orders. There's a new 1096 form, which is related to 1099s in the United States.
Right.
So if that's relevant for you. They've made permission set improvements, the ability to exclude specific permissions from a permission set. And then they've updated the GP data migration, potentially source object here, but they've added banks and entries, accounting periods, the ability to limit the number of years of historical data to migrate over, posting groups, vendor EFT information, and open receivables and payables information.
That's ironic.
So they've added a lot of stuff there to that, right? Now, I saved the best for last because to me, this may be the coolest thing that they've added.
Okay. In this release.
Yeah. And this is what's called search in company data. Kind of a not the greatest name.
Sounds. Yeah.
But if you go up into Tell Me and you say search in company data, what it does is it opens a Bing like page where you have one field where you can type in some characters. It says you need to type in at least three characters. And what it does is it searches through a list of tables to find matches to the data that you typed in there.
Really?
So if you type in, for example, in a demo company, for example, FABR, right? Which is the beginning of Fabricam.
Yeah.
Right? One of the vendors. It'll pull up the vendor, some posted invoices, vendor ledger entries, anything that
has those
tables. Yep.
Really?
So it's kind of like a Bing Google search where it's searching across a bunch of tables throughout the database. Because I'm not sure exactly what I want to look for.
I'd say, why is it your favorite? Is it something that?
Because it's just something that users know. So here's an example. Customer calls us up and say, hey, what's the status of my PO number 12345?
Right.
Today, I would first have to go to sales orders, do a search on that number, and then I'll see it. Now I have to go over into posted invoices or posted shipments and search on 12345, see if I find it, right? And so this kind of potentially eliminates that, and it searches across all these places. Do we have any reference to this number in our system that you're giving me? Now, here's the gotcha. And again, grain of salt, I just one test. I created a sales order. In the external document number, I put P1022. I then went and did a search. It did not find the open sales order. Now, after I posted the sales order, I shipped and invoiced it. I then went and did the same search. It found the ledger entries, the posted shipment, and the posted invoice document.
Huh.
So for some reason, I think it wasn't searching through the open orders table. I need to do more testing, but that's a little gotcha there. To me, it wasn't clear exactly which tables is it searching through. Because I can't imagine it's searching through every table in the whole database. There's like thousands of tables. It would take forever, right? So they had to kind of cherry pick.
Bing's pretty quick.
They had to cherry pick certain fields and tables that they want to do their searching on to make it quick.
I don't know.
But that's more, right? I'm sure people are going to ask that question and there's going to be more information about it. But to me, that's a really cool user feature. When someone calls up on the phone and they go, hey, what's up with item number 123?
Yeah.
I can go in 123. I can see all the item ledger, like a bunch of entries about it, right? Does it even exist in the system yet?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, if it's an open sales order, no.
Yeah. So these are some of the, I just wanted after, these are some of my testing results after going in and testing this stuff out. Overall, I liked it. You know, there's a couple things that are like, but overall,
everything.
Yeah. Right, yeah, you're never going to have everything all at once. There's no perfect system out there in the world.
No. I'm actually shocked I haven't heard of more organizations being updated with the version 21. I know they had a little bit of a delay. They postponed it in the beginning of the month, but
yeah,
I haven't seen too many.
Oh, I'm not surprised. We've had the major releases where it's the 30th of the month.
Yeah. They've been pretty quick the past couple major releases. So
I'm not surprised at all. but overall, very good marks from this guy. So I was excited.
Ken's giving it 2 thumbs up.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, Ken and I are going to look at some free apps that have a rating of 4 or better. We've picked a couple and we're going to talk about them. So,
yes, sir. All right. We have a first ever immediate clarification segment that we're adding in there. And so I need to clarify. So we in the new 2022 Wave 2 features segment, we talked about the search in company data. And I was talking about how it searched through certain tables and I wasn't sure where it was searching. Right. If I would have just scrolled down the page more, I would have seen that there's actually a setup page that you can launch. Oh. And in this setup page called Search Setup List Page, you can actually see the list of tables in there. And there's a checkbox column called Search Enabled. And you just have to go in there and check the other tables that you want to search through.
Nice.
And then there you go. Bada bing, bada boom.
So that's it's why you there. Updated sales orders.
So now I'm even more up on my search and company data feature. Number one feature being thrown out there in this release. Thank you. And we'll talk soon. All right. So today, our app spotlight segment here. Michael and I each went out to AppSource. We set some filters to say, show me all of the apps that are free and have at least 4 stars rating. I don't know if that's out of 5.
Out of 5, yeah.
Out of 5. So what are some of the top rated free apps that are out there? And so we each independently went out, reviewed the list of those and picked out one that we thought appealed to us. And so we could talk about those. The one I picked is called Graphical Inventory Profile. It's by Abakian, who has multiple other apps out there on AppSource. And the reason I picked this one is because if you've been using NAV or older versions of Business Central, maybe you know that when you go to various pages throughout the system and you look up item availability, there's different ways that you can search for item availability. For example, you could say, give me item availability by period, item availability by location, by bomb level, unit of measure, or event is one of my favorite ones. Each time a quantity is impacted. There used to be another option called availability by timeline. And it opened a graphical timeline view of your availability over time. So you could see a chart where it shows your inventory going up and then going down as you were at your, you know, as you sold some of those. And first they took it away. It's all of a sudden the timeline disappeared.
Sounds like an on-premise type of thing.
I don't know. Maybe there was some technical reason that Microsoft removed it.
Yeah.
But it was very helpful because you could kind of see the trend of an item. Like, what's been happening with this? Like, I see that I have 10 on hand, but I can see quickly if I look at the visual that we've had 10 on hand for like 4 months.
Right.
Why should I buy more at this point? Right. So I like that. And then I was disappointed when it got removed. But alas, you can go out there and use the graphical inventory profile and it adds it kind of into the same spot. Item availability by, and then you can pull this up. There's a request page where you've got a ton of different settings and options of what you want included or not included. And then you can click OK, and it shows you a visual representation of your supply and demand for that item over whatever period of time you define. So pretty slick, a nice little add-in feature. It's free. And it just plugs right in. It's like very little training, I think, needed. I just installed it and was able to start using it pretty much immediately.
Set a page or anything when you installed it?
There is one just to kind of enable it and activate it. It's great.
Pretty cool.
What do you got?
So it's kind of funny that you chose like an item add-on or whatnot. Mine's basically an inventory add-on. Huh? So I chose multi-company inventory by Isatec. I hope I'm saying it correctly. Like Ken said, went out there and I think there was 130 apps or close to it, maybe 128 that had 4 stars and that were free. There's really two reasons why I chose this app. I was looking through the apps and I wanted something that was simple to use and something that required minimal effort or to get it going. So the only requirement really for this app is that you have to be using multiple companies in Business Central.
Right.
If you only have one company, it's not going to work. Second reason why I chose this app is, you know, I'm a sucker for things that make you more productive, and this app makes you more productive. What this app does, it allows you to see a consolidated inventory view within Business Central from all the companies that are associated with your environment or your tenant. The only gotcha, as you would say with this, is the item has to have the same code in all the companies.
Same item number,
yes. Otherwise, it won't work. So what happens is for instance, you can go into like a sales order and you'll type in, you know, your item or whatnot. Let's say you want 5,000 shares, right, for a customer. Business Central will pop up and maybe say, you know, there's an availability issue or whatnot. We don't have that many. So you want to see how many you have throughout the company. Once you install this inside the availability menu, there's a drop down and you can actually see availability by company. Now it'll say company and it pulls up a page that shows you the different companies, and you can customize this page with, you know, location code, you know, quantity at hand. You can see shipping, you can show items in transit, whole bunch of different things. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
Very simple to use. It works anywhere Business Central is available. And you can use it, you know, you can use it on basically sales, purchase, or transfer documents. That's where you'll see it. So wherever the availability menu is, that's where you'll see it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So
very simple.
We picked some similar apps, greater visibility and tools to analyze availability.
Apps levels that'll work really well together.
Yeah, about that. All right. So we just have to close this out here and rate these Alaskan amber ales that we've been drinking here.
Yep. And remember, let's remember in the beginning of the podcast, Ked said that he, you know, thinks this beer is like a Dynamo Copper Lager.
Yep.
He gave a 56 rating to.
Yeah, my revised rating system assigned a 56, which means, again, over 50. I liked it enough. I'm going to have two. But I as we're sitting here right now, I've got two empty cans sitting in front of me, and it's been empty for a while. So I down these. So I liked it. So I'm going to go 69.
All right. Let me see what I got here. I gave Dynamo, however you want to say it, Copper Lager, an 84, which I remember I liked it a lot. I like this beer. I don't like it as much as the Dynamo Copper Lager. I'm going to go 79, solid 79.
There you go.
Really good, but it just has that little bit of a malty taste, yeah, which gets better the more you drink them, I guess, with anything else. But
yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, well, that wraps it up. As always, share with your friends, tell your friends, let everybody know about the podcast, and we'll be signing off with a
bye-bye.
As we end today's podcast, we want to give a big thank you to everyone who listens, shares this podcast, and leaves us reviews. You've taken a good amount of your time out of your day, and we truly appreciate it. Thanks again, and don't be afraid to email us at marketing@solsyst.com with your tips for the podcast, or maybe you'd even like to be a guest during an episode.